You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Joe Biden's presidential inauguration in Washington, D.C. tomorrow will be like no other.
First and foremost, and my objective is to keep America safe, but still allow people to celebrate.
The National Mall is fenced off to keep out those who have threatened violence. And President-elect Biden has been telling people to stay home and stay safe during the pandemic and watch from afar. So while many supporters here in Southern California want to celebrate the changing of the guard in person, they've had to make some difficult decisions in recent weeks. Joining us now are two such Californians, Dr. Ivy Yule Eldridge from Riverside, who decided to cancel her trip after the violence from a couple of weeks ago, and Edwin Rivera, who lives in Highland Park, who decided to make the trek to Washington, D.C. to celebrate. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Doctor, I want to start with you because you had planned to go to the inauguration, but the insurrection at the Capitol made you and your husband decide to cancel it, to say no. Tell me what inspired you to attend and then what happened to make you change your mind.
This was such a momentous occasion for both of us, being in Black Greek letter organizations, myself in the same sorority, Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, as Kamala Harris. And so this was such a celebration for both of us, for our organizations, for us as African Americans, for us as professionals. There were so many things that we were looking forward to, and the inauguration was only one of them. But after receiving phone calls from family that we had in D.C., and then just honestly seeing what was taking place on the TV, we did not feel that it was a safe place for us to be. We felt like with everything that was going on in 2020, this was not one more thing that we wanted to add onto our list of personal misfortunes had there been something that happened to us while we were out there in D.C. So unfortunately, we decided to cancel at the last minute.
I want to talk about your going to the inauguration, Edwin. And first of all, when did you book your flight to D.C. and what made you do it?
Well, as soon as it was official, as soon as I started hearing the pans ringing throughout Highland Park, my girlfriends and I immediately went online, purchased tickets, booked a hotel or our stay, and just we were just emotional, so emotional by the moment, and we had to go. We just all decided that we can't allow ourselves to be ruled by fear, despite the fact that everything's closed, despite the fact that we can't get anywhere near the National Mall. Like, I just feel like I have to be there, just in that area, just feel the energy of change.
And here we are with a pandemic. And Dr. Ivy, I was mentioning to you, obviously you changed your mind because of the violence, but you were still going to go, even with the pandemic, right?
You know, I was, and I'd like to say how much I respect Edwin for making that choice, because it was something that both my husband and I truly grappled with. And you mentioned fear, Edwin, and that is something that I think many of us have been living with for so long now, just within this past presidency. And again, speaking as an African-American and as a mother of a teenage son, that fear I live with every day of my life, and I imagine it is what many other African-American mothers of children and specifically sons live with as well. And sometimes that fear can cripple you, and it's about finding what that fine line is. I speak of that fear because it also ties to the pandemic and what you just asked. There is this overwhelming amount of fear of getting sick. And I've had, you know, multiple members of my friends and family to pass away, and even more who have contracted the virus. So, you know, my husband and I, we tried to take as many precautions as we could and really decide, was this something that we wanted to do? My husband even bought the full body suits for us on the plane. Yeah. And I may have totally been looking crazy, but I was willing to do that.
Full body, like a beekeeper suit or?
Yes, like the fake hazmat suit. And it was white. And I was willing to do it. And I say that because I completely identify with what Edwin is talking about, the hope and the celebration. And but again, that fine line, where do you draw the line?
And I would imagine, Edwin, that when you go, again, you're not going to be able to get onto the National Mall because it is fenced off.
Yes.
You're going to try and get, I presume, as you mentioned, as close as you can. What are you expecting to see when you get there?
My plan is to just see what I can possibly find. If there's a restaurant that's open nearby, and maybe we can watch the inauguration from one of the outdoor seating areas. I'm going to have a face shield and multiple masks and lots of sanitizer. And I am going to take, Doctor, like you and your family, like you're in spirit, you will be there with me. I understand and I completely respect your decision to not go, you know, and I just want to say that you will be there with me and I will have you in my thoughts.
Thank you so much, Edwin. I want to connect with you because I'd love to hear the play-by-play and everything that you experience and and kind of live through you a little bit and not being able to be there in person.
How are you going to watch, Doctor? Are you going to watch at home or?
We are. We're going to watch at home. My husband has one of the big blow-up screens to go in the backyard, and we'll sit out there and watch, and you know, with my kids, and I'll have some of my sorority sisters, you know, on Zoom, so we can all watch at the same time and celebrate together, and really you just be so encouraged and experience this moment. We're still not going to miss it. This is a moment to behold.
Well, I want to thank you both for sharing your experiences, and Edwin, good luck and safe travels to you. And Dr. Ivy Ewell Eldridge, assistant principal and college lecturer over in Riverside. Edwin Rivera, TV editor in Highland Park. Thanks to you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
That D.C. mob a couple of weeks ago not only attacked the Capitol, but also attacked the press, members of the media, and their equipment.
I will not tolerate fake news no more!
You hear the term there, fake news? He's not going to tolerate it. A term thrust into the political mainstream by President Donald Trump.
CNN is fake news. I don't take questions from CNN. John Roberts of Fox.
Reporters have been covering Trump for some time, especially at his rallies, with a rowdy and sometimes violent mix of political loyalists, white supremacists, anarchists, Proud Boys, QAnon, deep state believers. It can be a dangerous job. Well, now reporters across the country are preparing for tomorrow's inauguration of president-elect Joe Biden. Threats have been made against Capitol buildings all over the country, including our own capital in Sacramento. KCRW is a part of a group of public radio stations that coordinate on state and local news, and that group includes Capitol Public Radio, where Nick Miller is the managing editor for news, and Scott Rodd covers state government, and both join me right now. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, anytime.
Thanks for having us on.
Nick, jumping straight into this, you recently made the decision to go out and buy Kevlar vests. For your reporters, you're going to be out in the field tomorrow. Tell us about that decision and talk about what Kevlar really is.
That choice was informed by, you know, sort of the experiences that reporters like Scott Rodd were having in the streets. He's been covering the demonstrations and also the violent skirmishes and fighting that has been going on nearly every weekend since Election Day. And Scott can speak more to that, but it became pretty clear to me as an editor supervising the newsroom that our reporters needed this protection, the Kevlar vests that are stab-proof and bulletproof, in addition to the eye protection, the head protection, the gas masks, et cetera. And Scott, I don't know if you want to offer more clarity on that.
Yeah, I mean, talk about, Scott, the Kevlar vests and the reason why you would need them. I mean, what have you experienced in the field?
So the Kevlar vests, there are a couple different kinds. The ones that we got are what's called soft Kevlar. They go underneath clothing, which is good for keeping it concealed. I think, frankly, as a reporter, it's a good thing to not express outwardly that you're a combatant in any way, or you're there as dressed as a protester. So it's good to keep it concealed, but it is also good to just have it on to know that, you know, if someone does, you know, we've seen stabbings at some of these protests, not the ones in Sacramento, but in D.C., there were stabbings at some Proud Boy rallies. And in Sacramento, we've seen an escalating amount of violence. You know, that includes fist fights, but also sometimes people taking out, you know, sort of handheld weapons, whether they be batons or other sorts of weapons. And it just became clear over time that, you know, we needed increased protection. And that started with eye protection, gas masks, and then it, you know, grew to the point where it was clear we needed vests.
I mean, a free press is very important, by the way, for any democracy. Covering stories like this, I just wonder, you know, I've been doing this for, you know, the better part of 30 years. You guys have been doing it a long time. I wonder, you know, I mean, have you ever seen anything like this before? I mean, especially when we're talking about domestic politics.
I personally have not. I've been covering demonstrations since the Iraq War, Occupy, Ferguson, George Floyd, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the level of violence and the pursuit of violence by some of these groups that are at these demonstrations is different. That's a new dynamic, at least in my experience.
You know, I'd agree with Nick. It seems like he has much more experience than I do. Just he's been in the business a lot longer. But I was covering the inauguration in D.C. In 2016, and that was also a violent scene, but in a different way than what we've seen in Sacramento. That was more so confrontations between far left protesters and police. You know, many hundreds of them got arrested. There was, you know, tear gas, rubber bullets, etc. The dynamic that we're seeing now is, you know, there are the risks of crowd control from police, you know, whether it be tear gas or projectiles, but also, you know, from protesters towards press. And, you know, I've been threatened before, I've been confronted. So it does seem like this is a different level than what we've seen in the past.
You, Scott, have covered pro-Trump gatherings and protests in Sacramento. What other gear do you have to protect yourself, just in case?
You know, I've joked before that I switched from print to radio about almost 2 years ago, and I traded in some of my old gear, like a, you know, pen and notepad, for a microphone and a recorder. And over time, I've amassed a new set of gear, a set that I didn't think I would need, which is, you know, eye protective eyewear, a gas mask, a helmet or a bump cap, which is aimed to protect your head, and now this Kevlar vest. And so I certainly will be wearing it tomorrow, and I'll have the other gear handy. And put it on certainly when needed. And again, you know, we want to just be as cautious as possible, as safe as possible when we're out there.
Do you have your mic and recorder out when you're covering these events, or do you think that's too dangerous? I mean, do you identify yourself as media? Do you feel like you can't even identify yourself as a reporter because there is so much vitriol there?
This is a really interesting ongoing conversation right now, you know, for press covering protests. And I've sat in on a couple webinars with experts leading up to Inauguration Day. And, you know, some have advocated, like, do not identify yourself outwardly as press. If you have to identify yourself as press to police, make sure you have your press badge ready and you're able to do that. But there were some who advocated for not having that outward sort of label or presentation as press. I understand that. I personally feel it's important to be, you know, to show yourself as press and to make that clear. I do think that does come with a risk, but I do think it's important for folks to understand the reason that you're there and your purpose, even if it does come with a risk.
Nick, you're responsible for sending these reporters out. This is your job. How do you approach it? I mean, other than just buying this equipment, you want to talk to people about safety. These are your employees. You know, what do you tell them before they go out?
Look, we prepare for all scenarios. We don't pretend or take, we don't take lightly what could possibly occur tomorrow, what might occur in future, during future demonstrations, or just frankly in general. Like, I have a lot of concern beyond just Inauguration Day about the groups that are participating in actions tomorrow. Our preparation will continue. And, you know, Thankfully, Scott has been one of the few reporters in California out at the Capitol nearly every weekend since Election Day, observing, bearing witness, reporting. He's a known quantity out there, but so many reporters going out on Inauguration Day are going to be sort of the other. They don't have an understanding of the two groups, the militia groups, the white nationalist groups, and also the far left Antifa related groups. They don't understand the dynamic. They don't know that, hey, you probably can't even take your phone out and take a video because that puts you in, that compromises your safety as well. So there are so many things to consider with the dynamic of covering these groups. And I'm deeply concerned about tomorrow. And to that end, we've just had a lot of conversations about how we need to prepare, what scenarios we need to consider. And that's something that's going to be an ongoing discussion in our newsroom and clearly in newsrooms all over the country now.
And not to mention the pandemic that we have right now with, you know, people out there who are protesting who are not inclined to wear masks and are not inclined to stay 6 feet away from you, right?
That's true as well. That's the other dynamic. And we have Scott, you can speak to your approach on that, of course.
Sure. I mean, yeah, there are a lot of folks out there who are not wearing masks. Some of the protesters out there are openly skeptical of the pandemic to begin with, or perhaps just the deadliness of the pandemic. And that adds a whole new layer of complication to trying to do your job safely, trying to talk to folks, understand why they're out there, while also making sure that you're being safe and also making sure that they're being safe as well. The last thing you'd want to do as a reporter is be a vector for the virus. So, you know, making sure that not only you have the protective equipment for a combative situation, but also a protective equipment so that, you know, you are, you know, you're wearing your mask, you're keeping that distance whenever possible. That's extremely important too.
Well, Scott, thank you for what you do. Nick, you as well. Scott Rodd, state government reporter, and Nick Miller, managing editor over at Capital Public Radio. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Anytime.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis.
Are you ready to read a book?
It's bedtime here in West Los Angeles.
Good night, moon.
We're just tucking in for the night. Are you ready for a bedtime story?
In the great green room. All done. We just started.
Yeah, I know it's probably not bedtime for you, but just
feeling
go with it for
tired?
Right now. Lindsay Howard That's is reading to her 15-month-old daughter, Evie. Right now, Evie is an only child, but that wasn't always the plan.
Our plan was, so we had these grand plans. My friend from New York was going to get married in Italy in September of last year. So we were like, okay, we're going to go on vacation. We're going to travel around Europe a little bit. Like, this will be the perfect time to start when she turned 1 year to start thinking about trying again.
Well, and you know what happens to grand plans that were made in 2020. The wedding was canceled. Howard and her husband both work in healthcare, and they're nervous about their heightened risk of contracting the coronavirus. So they've decided to hold off on trying for another kid. In this unprecedented year that we've had, their story is actually pretty predictable. The U.S. is expected to welcome 500,000 fewer babies this year. 500,000 fewer babies. That's a 10 to 15% drop from last year. It's been about 10 months since our lives were turned upside down by this pandemic, which means we're just now seeing the beginning of what could be the baby bust of 2021. Here's KCRW's Kaylee Wells.
You might have thought, with all of us trapped at home, lots of time on our hands, nothing to do, the setting was perfect for a baby boom. Well, UCLA OBGYN Dr. Yalda Afshar thought her job might look a little different this year.
We thought there was going to be an increase in the number of births, but we haven't seen that uptick quite yet.
But obviously, the pandemic lasted longer and caused more turmoil and uncertainty than we expected in the spring. Turns out we won't see a big group of coronials or baby Zoomers after all. The trend is thanks to moms like Lindsay Howard. She spends her weekdays caring for Evie and working on her nursing degree. She spends her weekends at the hospital working as a nurse practitioner. Her husband also works in healthcare and flies around the country multiple times per week. So her hands are full. Add to that the uncertainty of living in a pandemic, and suddenly growing her family wasn't the top priority anymore.
we would have liked to have started before now, but there were just too many unknowns, I think. Stresses of timing, like initially in the beginning, birth partners weren't allowed into the hospitals that were kind of like, well, maybe we should hold off a little bit. Especially, you know, we felt like higher risk with me being in the hospital and him having to fly everywhere.
A study by the Guttmacher Institute last year found that a third of all women surveyed wanted to postpone their pregnancy or have fewer children because of the pandemic. That's felt especially hard in places like LA because that number shoots up for people of color. Nearly half of Latina women reported that their plans have changed. Yael Shern isn't surprised by the trend. She is a marriage and family therapist in Beverly Hills who has seen a spike in demand for her services in 2020.
One of the things that I'm kind of hearing most, like in the moms group that I was running, was a fear around raising infants during a pandemic and worrying about job loss, or they already have children and they're managing childcare as well.
She says the financial uncertainty, the concern over safety, no school, no grandparents there to help, all of that added to couples holding off on starting or expanding their families. Demographer and UCLA professor Ann Pebley says those concerns match other dips in population growth throughout history, like the Great Recession in 2008.
Part of the choice of having kids is whether you can afford to do so. And people often reduce the number of children they have or postpone fertility when they are feeling like insecure financially.
So it's just adding to a trend that the U.S. is already seeing. On average, women here give birth to 1.8 children. That's below the 2.0 replacement rate, and it's continuing to go down. Plus, California has one of the lowest fertility rates in the country. Last fiscal year, there were 14,000 fewer Californians born than the year before. The total U.S. population is still growing, though, thanks to immigration. Pebley predicts the baby bust in places like the United States could be counterbalanced by a baby boom in poorer countries with less access to contraception and abortion.
More economically insecure in our system, in our higher income system, means, geez, cut down on expenses. But children aren't that expensive in many poor countries. And so, you know, you're not putting huge amounts of money into all the things we do when you have a child. So having another child may actually be a good economic decision.
But just like with the Great Recession or the 1918 pandemic, busts are temporary. Shern says her clients' long-term plans haven't changed much at all.
In my work, it's mostly a postpone until this is something that feels safer or more manageable for me or my family.
UCLA professor and demographer Jessica Gibson says that, in fact, the couples who delayed in 2020 might make up for lost time.
I think we might have a little boomlet. I think this happened after the Great Recession also, you know, where people sort of delayed or postponed, and then there was, you know, a little bump afterwards. It'd be interesting to see also how perspectives have changed now that we have a vaccine. Some people may feel, you know, maybe more hopeful about the future and what they may want to do in terms of having a family that they may have thought about differently before the pandemic.
Pebley says though some couples may get down to business again soon, pausing for even just that year could mean smaller families overall.
There's an old saying in our profession that sometimes postponement is really not having children. In other words, you may postpone long enough that at a certain point you just don't have the child that you postponed.
Howard could fall into that group too. When she got married, her dream was to have four kids. Then it took a while to conceive Evie, add on postponing her next pregnancy because of COVID. And now she says they might stop at two.
I'm 35, so now I'm technically considered of an advanced maternal age. So I don't know. You know, I thought I would have started a little bit sooner as far as trying for a second.
Now Howard has gotten the vaccine, and her husband will likely get his soon, too. Meanwhile, she expects her work for that doctoral degree in nursing to ramp up next school year just when she planned to be pregnant. She and her husband haven't had the capital T talk about when they might start trying again, but she still hopes they'll grow their family sooner or later. For KCRW, I'm Kaylee Wells.
That's going to do it for us today. You heard earlier in the show Dr. Ivy Yule Eldridge and Edwin Rivera, who have plans to watch the inauguration in the morning, tomorrow morning. Dr. Ivy canceling her plans to go to D.C. after the insurrection, but Edwin going through with his travel plans. We're going to talk to them again tomorrow and what they thought about it all on Greater L.A. You can hear live coverage, by the way, of the inauguration of President Joseph R. Biden tomorrow on KCRW, starting at 8 a.m. with NPR special coverage. The latest, of course, at kcrw.com/GreaterLA. Check us out online and subscribe to the podcast, too. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Paul Smith, Ray Guarna, Mario Saavedra, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on the show tonight. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your time. Have a great night.